We saw last week the announcement of the birth of Samson. We saw how he was blessed with every possible blessing. He was equipped by God to accomplish great things. He was to follow the way of the Nazarite, not just for a short period of time, but for his entire life. And that meant no unclean food. It meant that he was not to eat to drink strong drink, and that he was not to cut his hair. Those were the three things. Those are the three parts of the vow of the Nazarite. And so now we are going to continue with the account of Samson, and we're going to see what he did with his life. So turn me to Judges chapter 14. In Judges chapter 14, so Samson grew up, and now he's as a young man. I guess it really starts with the last verse of chapter 13. Should really go with this chapter. Last verse of chapter 13 says, "And the Spirit of the Lord began to stir him in Mahanadan between Zorah and Eshtaol." Then we're into chapter 14. "Then Samson went down to Timnah and saw a woman in Timnah, one of the daughters of the Philistines. So he came back and told his father and mother, 'I saw a woman in Timnah, one of the daughters of the Philistines. Now, therefore, get her for me as a wife.' It was not explicitly forbidden in the law to take a daughter of the Philistines, since Philistines, most scholars would say that the Philistines were not Canaanites, but rather sea peoples in the Mediterranean. But it certainly violated the spirit of God's command. Verse 3, "Then his father and his mother said to him, 'Is there no woman among the daughters of your relatives or among all our people that you go to take a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines?' But Samson said to his father, 'Get her for me, for she looks good to me.' However, his father and mother did not know that it was of the Lord, for he was seeking an occasion against the Philistines. Now at that time, the Philistines were ruling over Israel." Right? I have no explanation how the Lord was working in all this and why the Lord chose this particular way to deal with this. We just know the scripture says he did. So Samson sees this woman of the Philistines. He says, "Woohoo, I want that woman." Tells his father, "Go negotiate." Because in those days, marriages were arranged. So if you liked a woman, then your father went and talked to her father, and they made the arrangements. They worked out the deal. Verse 5. "Then Samson went down to Timnah with his father and mother, and came as far as the vineyards of Timnah. And behold, a young lion came roaring toward him. The Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily, so that he tore him as one tears a young goat, though he had nothing in his hand. But he did not tell his father or mother what he had done." So they weren't with him at the time. "So he went down and talked to the woman, and she looked good to Samson." Okay, so another way that they worked out is it was this betrothal period where you would go and you would make the arrangements, including the dowry, the price, and then you would settle all that, and then sometime later you would come back and you would finally do the marriage ceremony and live together as husband and wife. Even nowadays, you can see that in the Jewish wedding service with the ketubah, the marriage contract. In olden days, that was done first, and then there was a period of time, even a year, before the marriage itself was consummated. However, it turned out that to be such a burden that the time of betrothal became shorter and shorter. So nowadays in Jewish wedding ceremonies, the time of betrothal lasts about 5 minutes. It's between the reading of the betrothal and the final "I now pronounce you man and wife" is between 10 and 15 minutes. So the time period is collapsed. In some circles in Judaism, they recommend even pausing or having an intermission or musical interlude between the revealing of the ketubah and the final exchanging of the vows and the ending of the ceremony, just to remind us of that earlier period. But anyway, it was quite some time. Who knows, months, maybe even a year. Verse 8, when he returned later to take her, he turned aside to look at the carcass of the lion, and behold, a swarm of bees and honey were in the body of the lion. Generally, bees don't do that to fresh carcasses, but people theorize that in this particular climate, you have a dead thing lying by the side of the road. And remember how it described how he killed the lion, that he tore him as one tears a young goat. So the carcass was torn open. And in that climate, in the heat and the dryness, it desiccated this thing. It almost mummified this carcass, so that it was this dried out thing by the in the field. And so, for whatever reason, that the carrion birds or the beast didn't come and devour this thing. So the bees came, made their nest inside. And where there are bees, there's usually honey. Verse 9. So he scraped the honey into his hands and went on, eating as he went. When he came to his father and mother, he gave some to them and they ate it, but he did not tell them that he had scraped the honey out of the body of the lion. Well, there are a couple reasons for that, setting up for what comes, but also that it was taking food out of a dead carcass by the side of the road that was unclean food. So this was violation one of the Nazirite vow, is that here he was eating unclean food. And had he told it to his parents, they would have gasped and not eaten it. So he didn't tell them. Verse 10. Then his father went down to the woman, and Samson made a feast there, for the young men customarily did this. Big production, big marriage feast. Lasted for more than a day. 7 days in this case. Verse 11, when they saw him, they brought 30 companions to be with him. Nothing shady about this. This is just what you did. He didn't bring any friends with him. They wanted to have a party, so they invited some people from the town, 30 of them. Philistines, most likely. Verse 12, then Samson said to them, "Let me now propound a riddle to you. If you indeed tell it to me within the 7 days of the feast and find it out, then I'll give you 30 linen wraps and 30 changes of clothes." Why 30? Because there are 30 people, so one for each. "But if you are unable to tell me, then you shall give me 30 linen wraps and 30 changes of clothes." And they said to him, "Propound your little riddle that we may hear it." So he either gives them each one article of this linen wrap and change of clothes, or they give it to him. Verse 14, so he said to them, "Out of the eater came something to eat, and out of the strong came something sweet." But they could not tell the riddle in 3 days. Then it came about on the fourth day that they said to Samson's wife, "Entice your husband so that he will tell us the riddle, or we will burn you and your father's house with fire. Have you invited us to impoverish us? Is this not so?" In other words, the only reason you were here at this party is so you can ruin us financially. We can't afford this one piece of clothing. Right. So this kind of tells you the tenor of these people, that just because they wouldn't give this one article of clothing, and two articles really, a linen wrap and one change of clothes each to Samson, that they were going to kill this man and this daughter and everybody in the household. They're going to burn them to death. Horrible kinds of people. Verse 16, Samson's wife wept before him and said, "You only hate me and you do not love me. You have propounded a riddle to the sons of my people and have not told it to me." He said to her, "Behold, I have not told it to my father or mother. So should I tell you?" However, she wept before him 7 days while their feast lasted. And on the seventh day, he told her because she pressed him so hard. She then told the riddle to the sons of her people. There are so many things wrong with this. I don't even know where to start. I mean, there was the death threat. There was the riddle itself. There was the fact that this wife did not tell Samson what was going on. Certainly as strong as he was, he might have been able to do something to protect her family, but it just said something about the tenor of the times that instead she tried to manipulate him into telling him the answer. Verse 18, "So the men of the city said to him on the seventh day before the sun went down, 'What is sweeter than honey and what is stronger than a lion?' He said to them, 'If you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have found out my riddle.' The Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily. He went down to Ashkelon and killed 30 of them and took their spoil and gave the changes of clothes to those who told the riddle. And his anger burned and he went up to his father's house." Okay, so he went down to another city of the Philistines, not that one. Killed 30 of them. Took their coats, took their clothes, and then fulfilled this promise, this riddle. And then he stormed off back to his father's house. Verse 20, "But Samson's wife was given to his companion who had been his friend." In other words, somebody else in the wedding party. Like I said, you read this and you say, wow, all the things that are wrong with what went on here. All right, so into chapter 15. "But after a while, in the time of wheat harvest, Samson visited his wife with a young goat and said, 'I will go into my wife in her room.' But her father did not let him enter." Okay, the young goat was an appropriate present in those days. "Her father said, 'I really thought that you hated her intensely. So I gave her to your companion. Is not her younger sister more beautiful than she? Please let her be yours instead.'" In other words, take her sister, please. "Samson then said to them, 'This time I shall be blameless in regard to the Philistines when I do them harm.' Samson went and caught 300 foxes and took torches and turned the foxes tail to tail, put one torch in the middle between two tails." Okay, so he takes these foxes and he fastens the tails together with a torch in between. Verse 5, "When he had set fire to the torches, he released the foxes into the standing grain of the Philistines, thus burning up both the shocks and the standing grain, along with the vineyards and groves." So the foxes went everywhere, carrying this fire with them, and set everything on fire. Samson could not have done this by himself. He must have had help from people he brought. Verse 6, "And the Philistines said, 'Who did this?' And they said, 'Samson, the son-in-law of the Timnite, because he took his wife and gave her to his companion.' So the Philistines came up and burned her and her father with fire." So they did it anyway. They did it anyway. The penalty that she was trying to avoid by manipulating Samson and everything else, they did it to her anyway and to her household. Number 7, "Samson said to them, 'Since you act like this, I will surely take revenge on you, but after that I will quit.' He struck them ruthlessly with a great slaughter, and he went down and lived in the cleft of the rock of Etam. The Philistines went up and camped in Judah, and spread out in Lehi. The men of Judah said, 'Why have you come up against us?' And they said, 'We have come up to bind Samson in order to do to him as he did to us.' Then 3,000 men of Judah went down to the cleft of the rock of Etam and said to Samson, 'Do you not know that the Philistines are rulers over us? What then is this that you have done to us?' And he said to them, 'As they did to me, so I have done to them.'" So it's the tribe of Judah that comes down. It's the Jewish men who come down and try to capture Samson for the sake of the Philistines. They said to him, "We have come down to bind you so that we may give you into the hands of the Philistines." Samson said to them, "Swear to me that you will not kill me." In other words, Samson didn't want to go up against his own people. So they said to him, "No, but we will bind you fast and give you into their hands. Yet surely we will not kill you." And they bound him with two new ropes and brought him up from the rock.
When he came to Lehi, the Philistines shouted as they met him. The Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily, so that the ropes that were on his arms were as flax, and his burned with fire, and his bonds dropped from his hands. He found a fresh jawbone of a donkey, said he reached out and took it and killed 1,000 men with it. Then Samson said, with the jawbone of a donkey, heaps upon heaps, with the jawbone of a donkey, I have killed 1,000 men. His attitude, I have killed 1,000 men. Don't you think it's a little weird, Samson, that one guy could kill 1,000 men all by himself? Don't you think that maybe God's Spirit had something to do with this? Verse 17, when he had finished speaking, he threw the jawbone from his hand, and he named that place Ramath Lehi. Then he became very thirsty, and he called to the Lord and said, you have given this great deliverance by the hand of your servant. So now that he's in need, he's calling on God. And now shall I die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised? But God split the hollow place that is in Lehi, so that water came out of it. When he drank, his strength returned, and he revived. Therefore he named it En-Hakkor, which is in Lehi to this day. So he judged Israel 20 years in the days of the Philistines. So what's up with this? You look at this account. Samson judged Israel, but did he deliver them from the Philistines? No. Did he rally anybody in Israel to fight on his side? No. As a matter of fact, Judah seemed to have been fighting on the side of the Philistines. Why in the world did Samson not rally those 3,000 men of Judah to have part of this victory? Why didn't he give a stirring speech encouraging them that together they could throw off the Philistine oppression? The Spirit of God accomplished so very much in Samson, but it was up to Samson to embrace that power of the Spirit of God in order to accomplish what God has set forth for him to accomplish. And in fact, Samson will not deliver Israel from the Philistines. The deliverance from the Philistines has to wait until the time of Samuel. And it is Samuel who delivers Israel from the Philistines. That in that sense, this is, I think, the only judge in the book of Judges to fail at the task that God had set him to do. God had raised up Samson to deliver Israel from the Philistines. He gave Samson every particular advantage. He gave Samson great strength. He gave Samson great power and courage. And Samson failed. He didn't do what God had called him to do. Was it God's fault? No, it wasn't God's fault. My gracious, to kill 1,000 men with a makeshift weapon like this. That's remarkable. That just isn't natural. God gave Samson the ability that had Samson been dedicated to God and to his plan, none could have stood against Samson. But Samson was not. This all has the flavor of a personal vendetta. Certainly it started that way, and perhaps had Samson been faithful, God could have used that if Samson had proclaimed to the people what had happened to him, what the Philistines were like, the victory that Samson already had against the Philistines in the burning of their town, if the character of Samson were better, then God could have used Samson more powerfully in accomplishing this deliverance from the hand of the Philistines. Of course, it wasn't all just Samson's fault. The men of Judah bear some of the blame here. Here they had a man as strong and powerful as Samson, a hero, a leader, and all they could think of is gaining favor of the hand of their oppressors. In a sense, it's like the time of Moses, when Moses came bringing the word of deliverance, but they would not hear because of their great bondage. So too today, God has called us to get the message out. I can't speak for you. I can only speak for me. God has not called me to pick up a makeshift weapon and go up against 1,000 people. But that's just me. God has called us to go against our own brand of forces. God has called up to us to stand up and proclaim against the corruption and evil of the day. God has called us to stand forth and proclaim the gospel. The Spirit of God has been working mightily, not just in Samson's life and not just in this way. You read, we had before this gone through the book of Acts, and we had seen the ways in which the Spirit had worked in the lives of the early believers to empower and encourage and motivate them, and even to give them insight into places and things that they ought not to have known from a natural perspective. That same Spirit is our heritage. That same Spirit belongs to us at the moment of redemption, when we cry unto God for deliverance. It says that God has given us his Spirit, that if we do not have the Spirit of God, that we are not His, that God gives us His Spirit. So we as believers have the Spirit, not just like Samson, but even deeper than Samson, because Samson had the power of the Spirit. The Spirit came upon him mightily, but we have the indwelling of the Spirit in a way that Samson could not have even imagined. But yet, we have available that power of the Spirit, but yet so many of us are still living fearful lives. We are still not embracing God's plan, God's purpose, or God's Spirit. We are instead totally at the mercy of the world around us. And so therefore we are not able to accomplish what God has set forth and empowered us to accomplish. Samson is a great testimony to the Spirit of God, and also a great warning to us, because Samson is the poster child for squandered potential. And so too we can squander our potential in God if we are not conscious of, and we do not listen, if we do not cooperate fully with the power of the Spirit. God's plan, deliverance of Israel, in this case from the Philistines, was accomplished, but not by Samson. But not by Samson. God's plan will always come to pass. Our only question is whether we want to have a role in it or not, whether we want the blessing that comes with it or not. Samson made his choice. And I pray that we make wiser choices ourselves. Let's pray. Dearest God and Father, I thank you for the gift of your Spirit. I thank you for a part in your plan. I thank you for using us. I thank you for choosing us for a role in your kingdom. Grant that we might have the wisdom and the insight that we wouldn't squander that which you've given unto us, but that instead we might move forward boldly with the power of your Spirit in order to accomplish that which you've set forth for us to accomplish, not for our honor and glory, but for yours, that your name might be praised and that precious name of our Messiah, Yeshua, might be lifted up. Amen.